This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, hello there, and thank you very much, Parker. I'm Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. Man, season six is rolling along smoothly like a finely tuned machine, and we just keep lining up the best of the best in the blues for you. Today's no exception, as we welcome a member of the younger generation of the genre. He has been named one of Guitar Player Magazine's 25 Best New Blues Guitarists and has also earned a spot on the Total Guitar Magazine list of 100 Greatest Blues Guitarists of All Time. Born and raised in Louisiana, his roots run deep in the blues and rock traditions. He is one of the most sought-after guitarists, blending the heaviness of rock with the emotional depth of the blues, and he is known for his ability to merge Southern roots with a forward-thinking edge. From his debut album, Burn It Down, in 2017, an album, by the way, produced by Tab Benoit, to his current release, Live in Mississippi. If you like a little rock with your blues, you're surely going to find it with today's guest, Mr. Eric Johansson. Eric, welcome to Time Signatures. How's it going?
Man, it's going well. Glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you, and I am excited to have you on the program, and I want to kick it off here and use one of my favorite icebreakers, man. Talk about your earliest memories of music.
Oh, man. I feel like I was always drawn in by music, so it kind of, before I even really came online and can remember things, I was playing air guitar on the couch as a toddler and stuff, you know. I remember going to some early concerts and stuff. And my mom was always playing music in the house. It's really hard to say, you know. My grandfather had a piano store, in Louisiana. So, I mean, I was hanging out at the store, you know, crawling around under pianos. And then eventually, you know, I have memories of playing hide and seek under them with other kids and, you know, in the family and stuff. So, man, it just feels like it was always there, you know, always a part of my life.
Now, how old were you when you realized that music was going to play a serious piece of your life?
I don't remember not feeling that way. So really always, I don't think I really seriously entertained the idea of doing anything else. You know, there is a point where I thought, various points where I thought I might do something else in addition, you know, if I couldn't make music, make a living, because I'm certainly interested in other things. But music, you know, was always the central thing in my life, really.
Now, talk about the first band that you ever played with, Eric. How old were you at that point, and how far did you go with it?
Well, I started seeing other, you know, older musicians and stuff. I tried to have a quote-unquote band in junior high, and, you know, it was like we sat around and talked about what, you know, what the band was going to be and what the t-shirts were going to look like, and it wasn't really like a real thing. And that was like a hard rock thing, at least in theory. And then when I first started being able to play some bluesy stuff and like jam with some of the, older musicians, kind of hobbyist musicians and people that were just kind of, you know, doing it casually, I really found that really inspiring, because then I was kind of able to improvise and learn how to play with people that were keeping good time. And that really got me more into the blues, as well as just kind of my interests moving that way. But I think being able to experience it firsthand while, jamming with people, compared to the stuff that, kids were doing it, who I was maybe going to school with or whatever, that really pulled me in that direction. I played, yeah, I mean, I played with an uncle of mine that was kind of, we did like a blues trio for a couple of years when I was in high school. And then I kind of moved back to doing, I was trying to find my own original voice and music, and I, started experimenting again, trying to fuse different styles together. And some of that was a little bit more on the hard rock angle. Yeah. And then later on, I started, playing for other people as a guitarist for hire a little bit around New Orleans.
Oh, in 2016, you were signed by Tab Benoit to Whiskey Bayou Records, and your debut album, Burn It Down, came out about a year later, by my estimation. How did that whole process take place, and how cool was it that you grabbed the attention of Tab?
Yeah, it was kind of a gradual organic thing because I really I started crossing paths with him. I had heard of him and certainly knew of him. And then a friend of mine was playing drums for him, and I was also doing some stuff with Cyril Neville, and they were doing the Voice of the Wetlands All Stars together, and so I kind of, I'd go into his shows more and more. If he was playing in New Orleans, I was going to be there, and got the chance to, he started inviting me to play with him to sit in and stuff, and that went on for, a couple of years at least. And then I just hadn't really, even though I'd been doing blues, and that was always really a part of what I was doing. Anytime I'd pick up a guitar, and I had even performed my own blues trio here and there, but I hadn't really put out a record with my name on it doing that.
Okay.
And I sort of started thinking, well, that would be the perfect way to do it if I could, get with somebody like Tab and work with him. And I had actually jammed with him a couple of times in various settings with him on the drums. And I knew that that was an idea I had as well, that I was, well, hey, you could play the drums and produce the record. And so, yeah, we started talking about that, and around 2016, I sat in with him at the Crescent City Blues Fest in New Orleans, and we talked about it a little bit more, ended up going over to his place, so his studio, checking it out. And it seemed like a plan. At that time, I didn't really even know he was starting a label. I just was thinking, let's make a record. And
Sure.
then I found out that he was starting a label, and so we decided to put it out on that label. And then he brought me out on the road for really a couple of years, opening up most of his shows, and he would play drums for me in the opening set before he would come out and do his set.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was great. And I mean, I got to see him perform a lot and jam with him a lot, and all over the country and on some of the cruises and stuff like that. And it was great. It was a great experience.
So you kind of develop maybe a like a big brother, little brother type of relationship. I mean, buddies, on the tour type of
Yeah,
thing.
definitely. I mean, I've learned a lot from him. Honestly, I have always been drawn to the power trio thing, and he does that really well. And he also just his approach, there's a lot of dynamics in it. He's not just rocking at people. He brings it down and brings it up, and talks to the crowd and gets them on board with the show, whether it's a standing room rocking thing or a sit down thing. So I did learn a lot from that. I feel like, and I was able to pick his brain brain a lot about, how do you approach this or how do you think about that? We have different styles, but I do I already felt a lot in common with just the straight ahead, full throttle power trio thing.
Sure.
But I think that his way of incorporating some of the Louisiana styles into it is pretty unique, like the Zydeco and all that. I played with some, I jammed with some other and picked up a side gig as a Zydeco guy for a little while. And but fusing those two, that's definitely, I think, one of the things that sets him apart. And yeah, man, it was it definitely, I definitely he's been a mentor of sorts for sure.
Very cool. Now, from there, you released Below Sea Level in 2020. Now, were you able to get that release before the COVID lockdown, or?
No, we recorded it right before everything really slowed down. It was
Oh, man.
really, it was just kind of crazy. We recorded it right in the last week of February, and of course, had no idea. And then, like a week and a half later, everything, no shows, and everything had slowed down really, or come to a halt. And I worked on finishing the record because at that time it wasn't clear how long the slowdown or of mute live
Right.
music was going to be. So at that time, it's just you kind of, you're progressing through. Well, we finished the mixing and all that and got it mastered and, finished the artwork and everything. And then it kind of became clear that, like, well, we need to pick a release date and, start moving this toward release. I just wasn't of the mindset of sitting on it because, if nothing else, put music out there for people to listen to,
Oh, yeah.
So it actually came out in September of 2020. So there was very little touring around it.
Sure.
We did a couple isolated things here and there. And I was doing live streams and stuff from home, which was very not the one to present the music, but it did actually connect with a lot of people.
Yes,
There's a
sir.
lot of people that came on board that I connected with doing the live streams, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, man, it was a lot of fun making that one with Luther and Cody Dickinson from North Mississippi All Stars. Cody on drums and Luther was producing it, and I still really like the sound of that record. And then finally when I things started moving again, 2020, I started getting out there and doing some touring. We were able to play the songs live and it was great to kind of get out there and finally see people's reactions to them.
I wanted to ask you because a lot of musicians went out and did what you did, a lot of live streaming during the COVID shutdown. Do you feel like it helped you maybe solidify your base a little bit and make a deeper personal connection with your fans?
I think so. I think at first it's funny because your concept of your relationship with the fans online evolves a bit. And at first I was thinking, well, you can't present or you don't want to present something that's not ultimately like what you're trying to go out there and do. So if
Right.
you have a rocking record with a band and your whole thing is that you improv together tightly with the band and create this energy, then why would you want to grab an acoustic guitar in your living room, But after a while it was like, well, it's pretty much that's the option, So I think some part of realizing that, okay, you can't think about how what you're going to do if you're going to jump online every week, you can't think about how what you're completely, manicuring it or structuring it. You're just going to be there. And that creates a lack of filter, a lack of presentation, which at first seems like, well, that's a weird idea. You put so much work into how you're coming across and you're just going to hop
Right.
on there in your living room. But at the same time, I think it creates a freedom to realize that, you don't necessarily have to think about how everything is going to come across. You can just be and just show up, and the connection will happen, So yeah, I think it definitely it got me a little bit more in touch with who the fans were, at least, the ones that were around at that time, and got to know them a little bit more, and they got to kind of feel like they got to know me a little bit more, because it wasn't just a prepared message around an album release or something. It was just hanging out.
And I saw a lot of that. Even big national names like Garth Brooks was doing a regular thing every week, and Billy Dean was doing stuff. We had our local musicians that were doing little impromptu concerts in their basement. I mean, it really seemed like the COVID lockdown kind of forced us to get that community type of a feeling back into our lives. And I think that a lot of these musicians like yourself that did this, I think did yourselves favors by doing that, honestly. The Deep and Dirty has been called your most powerful work yet, with a fusion of raw, high-energy guitar playing and gripping, well-crafted songwriting. This was a project that really caught the attention of your critics, didn't it?
I'm really proud of it. I think it seems like, my goal is to let the music really become its own thing, and to not feel like it's trying to fit things together, but that just that it just naturally evolves in a certain direction. And I think that that record does that in a cool way. It's got elements of rock and blues that are, just together in a natural way for me, without any specific idea of having to find that balance. I think it just more naturally started to find itself. And so I think the sound of it, and the energy of it, the grooves and everything, I was definitely a little bit more conscious of wanting some different feels than we didn't have in the show, different grooves and beats and things. So yeah, I think it seemed to be well received, and still enjoy playing the songs a lot, when we're out there.
Right on. Eric, you've shared the stage with as an opening act with some of the biggest names in the blues, Tab Benoit notwithstanding. I mean, everyone from Christo and Kingfish Ingram to Samantha Fish to the legendary Walter Trout, and more, as they say. It seems like you've really earned your stripes along the way, though, haven't you?
I hope so. You just try to approach it honestly and do your best. I always feel it's an honor to open up for people, because the vast majority of the people in there are not there to see you. They've come mostly to see somebody else, and you get to win over people, which is a different thing than when you play your own show. Because mostly when you play your own show, it's people that are already know about you, and that's why they came to the show. But when you open up for somebody else, you kind of have people like, all right, what's this going to be? What's this about? And so it's a cool feeling to kind of watch them get on board over the course of the set. I still enjoy that. As much as I love going and doing our own show and being able to play longer and, have the stage how we want and all that stuff, but I still like opening up for other people, because I think there's that energy of just kind of going from arms crossed something to arm in the air, that I really kind of enjoy. And yeah, man, I mean, we hope to keep doing it, with the right fits, because I just think it's a great way. I mean, these days, honestly, for this type of music, I think that, I mean, you're not really looking for the radio necessarily, or there's not, it's not like you're going to be on MTV or something. Everything has its own little piece, of the puzzle. Somebody might
Yes, sir.
discover you on social media, somebody might hear you on the radio, somebody might hear you on Spotify. But when you have a room full of people that you're able to connect with that maybe didn't know about you before, it really is one of the most powerful ways to make a deep connection with people, in the course of a night. Yeah, I really, really cherish those experiences.
And it really helps you with your short game, doesn't it? I mean, when you've only got 30 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever, to open for somebody, it really forces you to dig deep and pull the best out, right?
For sure. And that's always as well, because I really like to feel out the set based on the moment. And we're also an improvisational group, so every song doesn't have the same length
Right.
every night. So you just kind of have to feel it out and watch the clock a little bit when you get near the end. But yeah, I mean, that's the it's kind of can be fun as well to do that. I like both. I'm happy doing an opening set or one set headline festival or whatever type of set, or doing two sets and doing longer, digging deeper into the material. All of them kind of have their benefits,
Right. Now, I know there's some people out there that don't appreciate rock-infused blues. It's just the way it is. I happen to like it, okay? And I kind of caught a little bit of a Bonamassa sound on your new album. Have you ever had a chance to collaborate with him at all?
No, I've met him. I met him once. We hung out in New York for a little bit.
Okay.
But he's a cool guy. I mean,
Yeah.
I honestly, I feel like, he wasn't part of my formative, musical, I guess, years. You know what I mean? Like there's a certain time where you feel like you absorb things from wherever they're coming from, and then you've kind of got your style a little bit. And I sort of discovered him after a point where I sort of feel like I already had my own way of approaching things. And so I'm not, I, but there's that always can, like, somebody introduced me to Robin Trower not that many years ago,
Oh,
and he
wow.
was like, you must have listened to a lot of Robin Trower. And I was like, well, no, I haven't actually, but now I will, because I want to know what you're talking about, why you think that. And
Right,
then I
right.
listened and I was like, man, this is totally up my alley. This sounds exactly like I get what he's saying,
Right.
So I totally take that as a compliment when people hear that with Joe. I never sat down with his stuff and like picked out anything or like tried to figure out, well, what is he doing, I've listened to it since becoming, more hip to his stuff, but I've never, certainly intended to sound like him or anybody really. But I'm fine with that comparison. I mean, it's, to me, one of the things that I always find interesting about the whole conversation of the genres between rock and blues, I understand that at a certain point, if you don't put brackets around a style, let's say if you're going to have an event or a radio station or whatever it is, if you don't
Right,
put some
right.
kind of brackets around it, then it just becomes, well, everything is anything. And then, and then you're hearing the same stuff here and there, and whatever festival you go to, it's all the same. So I get that. But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff that happened in the late 60s and early 70s that, to my ear is extremely bluesy, even though at that point they were just calling it rock or whatever. I mean, a
Yeah.
lot of stuff is fairly straight ahead blues at times. And then there's ways in which I kind of feel like you can play blues patterns. You know, you can play a 1-4-5 like blues pattern, and you can play it like Van Halen, or you can play an odd chord change and you can play it like B.B. King or something.
Right.
So there's every gradation in between, and I don't really know how you know everybody, because everybody has their own concept of what they mean by these things,
Yes. Yeah.
you know. So I certainly don't try to play to fitting in a certain box, but I'm happy to be called blues if that makes sense to people, and if it doesn't make sense to them, then
I certainly look at it as rock infused blues, and I like it. I mean, I like Bonamassa. I like, you take your pick. There's a lot of musicians out there today that bring a little bit of blues in with their rock, or bring their rock with their blues, however you want to look at it. I just happen to like your sound, And the new album to which we alluded a minute ago, Live in Mississippi, which was released in late March of this year, was recorded at the legendary Ground Zero Club in Biloxi, Mississippi on August 9th of 24. This project is already gaining critical acclaim for you. And how does that make you feel? I mean, it truly seems like you were having a good time on that album.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we always have a good time playing live, and I do think it. There's something about playing blues in Mississippi or Louisiana, where a lot of this stuff comes from. I think there's a deep relationship with it there. You know, people understand it in a maybe in a more local sense. It's been going on there for a long time, so there's a little bit of a feeling of being at home, even in Mississippi. And yeah, I mean, it was a great show, and I was glad we were able to capture it. I was happy to get kind of a high fidelity, a little bit, more properly recorded live recording that
Right.
was ready for vinyl mastering and all that. So that was cool, just to get it out there on all the formats. And but yeah, man, I mean, it's, I really like hearing other bands' live records. Sometimes that'll be my favorite stuff. And as much as you always put more thought into the studio record because it's more the first time people are going to hear songs,
Right.
but the live thing captures the organic thing that is happening out there night to night as the songs evolve and change, and you realize what the songs want to do when you're on stage. It'll just feel like it wants to go somewhere, and so then you go somewhere. It feels like
Yep.
this part wants to, we want to linger on this part a little bit more. It just feels like that's what needs to happen. And so when you hear the live record, you get to hear sort of the evolution of the songs.
Yes, sir.
And
Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
no, I mean, and yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, and we did a couple of covers on there too, which that's another thing that, I haven't really done so much on the studio records, which have pretty much all been original. But yeah, it's just cool to throw in a couple of reworked versions of other people's tunes,
Yes, sir. Well, from the looks of your tour schedule, it looks like you're doing quite a bit across the pond, as it were. Do you find the European blues fans are strong supporters of your music style?
It's gone really well. Like, really a lot of enthusiasm over there, and I'm very thankful to be breaking into Europe, and having that become part of what we hopefully every year. Because yeah, I mean, first of all, I like seeing the world, and I like meeting people from around everywhere, and they do seem very supportive and very into the music. So yeah, we this year, like last year, I think we were overseas four or more times. And this year, kind of similarly, like I'm going to Poland next month and just doing one festival. And then, and I guess we've got a something in Romania and Belgium. And then later in the year, we are going to be doing a good tour, a headline tour through
Okay.
multiple countries for about a month. So, yeah, I mean, really, really glad to be breaking into that area and meeting a lot of new fans over there.
Where can people go to learn more about Eric Johansson? Maybe buy some merch, some CDs, or vinyl, or book you for a gig.
The website is, the best place for all of that, just ericjohansson.com. And and there's a store there and we still run the store. I still end up packing up stuff and shipping it out and signing stuff. And so I like to keep that home operation going because it's a cool connection to have with people. And and there's obviously links to all the socials there, but Eric Johansson 504 on Instagram and Facebook, and then just Eric Johansson on TikTok and YouTube, and but they can find all the links there off the website.
Sounds good. Eric Johansson, it has been a pleasure to have you on today, sir. I wish you much continued success. And anytime you have news to break, whether it's an album or a tour, always contact me. There's room here for you anytime.
Awesome. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it, man.
And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures with Jim Irvin. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Eric Johansson, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.